versus Miller, number 1250238. Ms. Coulthard. Did you try the case?
I did not. Molly Roth tried the case in our office.
Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Donna Coulthard, and I represent Mr. Miller, Mr. Keenan Miller, in the case before you this morning. Before I start, I just want to clarify where we are in this case. After we filed our opening brief, Mr. Hardy contacted us and asked if we would mind having the judgment modified to get rid of or modify a couple of our more contentious conditions. Of course, we were happy to agree to that. And so Judge Prado modified the judgment. There are no longer suspicionless searches among the conditions. Searches have to be conducted pursuant to reasonable suspicion. And Mr. Miller will no longer be confined to his home for the 3 years. So what that leaves in this appeal is the conditions that for the 3 years of a supervised release, his computer be subject to some sort of probation monitoring program. According to Mr. Hardy's Appendix B in his brief, that's a monitoring program that looks to be particularly designed for sex offenders. And then the condition also that he be for 3 years subject to constant GPS monitoring. And as I've argued in the brief, we contend that both of these conditions are excessive and should be remanded to the court for either excision or more likely for modification.
Is the GPS monitoring just an ankle bracelet?
It's an ankle bracelet combined with a receiver. I think it's about a pound size receiver that the defendant carries at all times. I've looked around to see what kind of intrusion that is. The pictures that I have found, you actually can see the ankle bracelet around the individual's ankle. The receiver, I think, is a little bit larger than a cell phone, but he has to carry it at all times.
You just keep it on your belt or something.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Okay. I suspect that if he went through a magnometer, for example, he would have to put it there. Certainly if he were on a date, it would be fairly obvious that he had monitoring.
I wish Judge Prado had put one to suit restriction that he should never have a date.
I can certainly understand that.
This is a very dangerous man, it seems to me.
And I am not here to argue that Mr. Miller does not have serious problems. That is not my point at all. And we very much appreciate the prosecutors agreeing to the modification that they've agreed to. And my arguments about the remaining conditions, really, I think I can make fairly briefly.
Are you a public defender?
I am. I'm the deputy defender in the Western District.
In Santa Cruz?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I thought that provision there was kind of odd about when you get out, leave town, you know, go somewhere else, because we don't want you in San Antonio or maybe not even in Western District if we can help it.
I looked into that. Those are not uncommon conditions, especially.
No, but doesn't that, I don't want to demean your case, but it seems to me, you know, I've been through supervised release cases forever, and first of all, if a fellow goes to another town, then they come to me and say, well, you transfer jurisdiction, because he's now living in Ohio, saying, okay, we transfer jurisdiction. And then it gets up there, the probation office in Ohio, and they kind of start doing whatever they do in Ohio. And so, you know, I'm wondering if it's even right now, he's in jail, right?
He is.
I hate to say it this way, but is it right now even necessary to worry about what's going to happen when he gets out and where is he going to go when he gets out? And all they'd have to do is come back to Western Texas and say, we can't, you know, this thing is hard for us to enforce. Or if it's already transferred to the, when I transferred, I give jurisdiction to the judge up there and say, just do whatever you want to. I mean, you know, I've done my thing, you do your thing. And I just wonder if this is kind of much ado about nothing.
I think the point is well taken, and this court in Miller and other cases has suggested that the proper avenue for review is that when a problem arises, the defendant should go to the district court and ask for modification. Let me propose
the sentencing court or the court where he's living.
If the judge transfers jurisdiction, mm-hmm. It would be the court where he's living.
Of course, this is Judge Prado, so that seems to be somewhat.
Well, and that was going to be my first reason why in this case that might not be the appropriate remedy. Judge Prado's intentions are not altogether clear. For example, the computer monitoring, Mr. Hardy and I already have a disagreement about how broad that requirement is. Mr. Hardy suggests in his brief that a common sense reading of that requirement would include all computers that Mr. Miller uses. My common sense reading of that requirement is that if you're monitoring someone's computer, you're monitoring his computer. So already we have a disagreement about the scope of this of these requirements. On top of
using computers in prison?
There is limited computer use in prisons. I do not know if Mr. Miller is permitted to use them. My guess would be that he's not. I have not heard from him vis-a-vis computers. The second reason.
His computer, you mean once he gets out and gets access to his personal computer?
His personal computer. That's how I would read it.
Computer.
Right, exactly. That's how I would read it. But Lifshitz, you know, the Second Circuit goes through an incredibly broad array of monitoring programs that can be used on computers, all the way from we're going to periodically check in and see what you're doing to we are going to put something, you know, that monitors every keystroke that you enter on your computer.
Well, your defense counsel, it seems to me that was your burden. If you wanted to show that it was limited, it was your burden to show here's what they can do, here's why we don't like it.
I would argue
we can't decide a vague, meaningless thing.
I would argue that we did meet our burden by objecting that it was overbroad. And Ms. Roth very clearly objected that the condition was overbroad. And I think at that point, you know, there needs to be a response why it's not overbroad. And really, that issue was not dealt with.
I thought it was individualized rather than just broad, generic monitoring.
It is a, let me grab the description, because this is the first time I've seen it within this appendix. So the monitoring is individualized in that there is some interaction between the probation officer and the defendant. We don't know what level that is. And as far as being individualized, I would argue that the statute requires that the individualization or the particularity happen in the district court, so that it was really incumbent upon the district court to say, look, I'm worried about your email usage, which is exactly what Judge Prado said. I'm worried about your email usage. Fair enough. So I'm going to put a condition on here that's reasonably necessary for us to take care of your email usage. And in your particular case, you know, that might be, and I would suggest the more appropriate intrusion would be to monitor his email or to restrict the use of his email. But instead, the program that is going to be applied to Mr. Miller requires the probation officer to teach someone how to navigate the internet in a safe and non-deviant manner. That's
but
not,
you know,
Mr.
This isn't going to happen for how many years? 30 months? Something.
It's going to happen in 30 months.
Well,
that's exactly
how
right.
Computers and the internet, everything's changing daily. I mean, who knows what the restriction and the capability is going to be when your man is out. I think Judge Kazin's right. It's much to do about nothing at this point.
My strong suspicion is that their techniques will be better and we'll be able to get more information, which I think is another reason to counsel again against requiring Mr. Miller to wait. The interests involved here, as the statute says, we're talking about privacy interests. Now, if I were before you on a case where the condition had been absolutely no internet usage, which Mr. Hardy suggests would have been an appropriate condition. I disagree. But if I were, that would be a sort of associational privacy interest. What's happening here is his use is being monitored. So he's being watched. He's being looked at. This court really hasn't dealt so much with monitoring, but that's a substantively different interest. And without proper limitations, Mr. Miller will be required to go into court and get a modification only when the probation officer has overstepped that really important interest that we not be investigated, that we not be monitored by the government unless there is a good reason. Now, in a probationer's case, it probably doesn't have to be probable cause to monitor you that broadly, but for no reason at all, you at least have to have that fit between reasonably necessary and Congress's sentencing goals. I think reasonably necessary in this case means monitoring email. And this condition goes well beyond that, at least as written, and ought to go back and let the judge clarify what portion of Mr. Miller's internet use should be monitored and to what extent.
What sorry, I don't know this answer right now, but what exactly is the condition that bothers you?
The condition is that he be subject to the Computer Restriction Monitoring Program, initial CRMP. And Mr. Hardy very helpfully provided the probation officer's guide on what that looks like, and it appears as though it is designed for sex offenders.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. And so we really don't know anything about this condition. And I think given the serious concerns about Mr. Miller, and we're not here to say they're not. I mean, Mr. Hardy's going to tell you a lot of stuff. I'm not here to say that's not true. But given the serious concerns about Mr. Miller, I would think we would want a targeted, pointed condition to supervised release that addresses
conduct. The condition should have been that he check himself into a state hospital and not leave.
You know, Your Honor.
I mean, this is a man with a sustained, you know, I have some familiarity with people with mental illness, and this is very worrisome.
I share your concerns.
So
I also have some familiarity.
I think the computer is the least restrictive thing they might have done to him.
And I think that we may be at a point with that with Mr. Miller, but that's not what supervised release is for. It may be at some point that Mr. Miller is involuntarily
committed. No, he wouldn't have to be supervised if he checked into the state hospital.
And it may be that a state court finds that that's what has to happen to Mr. Miller. I'll tell you, in his more lucid moments, Mr. Miller has repeatedly requested mental health treatment, and right now, although Judge Prado ordered that he be sent to a prison hospital, he is not in one. So,
he medicated in the prison?
He has been ordered to be medicated. I am assuming that he's being medicated in prison. But he is not in a hospital, and Mr. Miller said that same thing happened to him in his prior imprisonment. So I share your concerns. We may be there, but that's not what we do in supervised release. In supervised release, we try to reintegrate. I would suggest that having an ankle bracelet for 3 years when you're trying to get employment, when, you know, I'm assuming that since he's going to be on supervised release, he's going to explore social relationships, that stigmatizing is not reintegration. And for that reason, the GPS monitoring is excessive.
Some people don't get reintegrated.
Some people don't.
Some people shouldn't socialize for a reason.
That's absolutely true. We haven't made that assessment in a court of law with Mr. Miller yet. The assessment we've made with Mr. Miller is that he should go to prison for 60 months and that he should be on supervised release for 3 years. We may have to reevaluate that as a system.
You keep saying me, but with all due respect, your involvement with him is going to end after this appeal, right? Or possibly certiorari, but we aren't doing anything for Mr. Miller. We are the government, and we're telling him what he has to do later. But.
I'm speaking as a member of the federal bar, that the federal government, the federal system has not made that assessment about Mr. Miller yet. There are proper procedures to make those assessments, and when and if the time comes.
Well, see, the monitor will turn him up threatening the president or some senator or something, and then I guess we can do what else.
I hope that's not true. Unless the court has other questions, I'm happy to sit down.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Has the new defender been installed now? She has,
yeah,
hasn't
she? She has. We're doing great. Thank you.
Did she move to San Antonio yet?
She hasn't. We're waiting for the kids to get out of school.
Okay, great. Mr. Hardy?
If it please the court, my name is Mike Hardy, representing the United States. Supervision conditions, of course, are about managing risk. And we're dealing, as the number of your comments have pointed out, we're dealing with a very dangerous person whom even at the sentencing hearing, Judge Prado forecasted that the defendant would reoffend because he would not let go of this grudge that's festering within him concerning the defendant's former probation officer. So in a number of respects, this defendant is in a position like a sex offender, very dangerous, very likely to reoffend. It's just that we don't have as many obsessive stalkers who fit into a discrete category as we do with sex offenders. And so the district court has made findings and imposed conditions that apply conditions like those that you would see for a sex offender.
Who suggested that? Was that Judge Prado's idea, or did the government suggest that, or who?
There was an involvement with the government urging it. There was an involvement with the probation office also urging this. Because, and Judge Kazin, you referred to this earlier, but we've got the probation office ostensibly recused from the pre-sentence report process because the probation officer was a victim of the instant offense. And so there is...
So the whole office recused?
The entire probation office within the Western District of Texas recused from the sentencing process.
So who took that function?
Pardon me? There was a probation officer from the Southern District of Texas who was kind enough to help out. And by the way, I was present for every aspect of this case, every charging aspect and every proceeding in this particular matter.
A lot of times the probation office just drafts all that stuff, you know, and you know, I'll say you're on supervised release, there's a lot of, here's a few of the conditions, there's others, we'll get all of the judgment, it's all done. No disrespect, but it's a little bit sloppy, in my opinion, to say we quote this thing that's really a sex offender as per this book that's in another place and all that, and just sort of clip it in there that it could have been actually tailored to this guy without just saying we're going to just stick the sex offender booklet on you, but who did that?
Well, we didn't stick the sex offender booklet on anybody. Because we're present with a person who is like a sex offender in terms of his...
Not that, but you could have, with a little effort, copied that and put it into this guy and not just throw it out there and say, okay, it's a sex offender, but we're sort of borrowing that.
I don't see how that changes the wording and the condition at all.
Accurate work, that's what.
It doesn't change the substance of what it is that the defendant will be called upon to do.
It's a little less sloppy than to just say, let's clip this one out. It doesn't apply to this case, but let's clip it out and stick it in here.
Well, again...
That's my say, so don't worry about it.
All right. And we would still wonder what specifically should be said that wasn't said. Let me give the court an example. There are a number of conditions that the court imposed on sentencing. One of those conditions is, if deemed necessary by the probation officer, the defendant shall participate in a program approved by the probation office for treatment of narcotic addiction or drug and alcohol dependency, which may include testing and examination to determine the defendant has reverted to the use of drugs and alcohol. Another condition, the defendant shall participate in a mental health program approved and monitored by the probation office. Neither of those conditions are challenged. They're both phrased very broadly because it is essential that there be great flexibility. The judiciary has insisted on flexibility. It is prudent to have flexibility so that it can be tailored to the exigencies of the particular case.
So those are sort of basic requirements anyway.
They are basic requirements, but and yet there's nothing in these conditions that say when the testing will occur, what modality or methodology will be used, what sort of lifestyle changes the defendant will be called upon to make.
That's premature.
It is.
He's in jail.
That's right. That's right.
Hopefully he's not on drugs, but who knows?
But the point I'm trying to make is that we... These conditions that are currently under attack and on appeal are necessarily broad.
Well, those aren't the ones on attack on appeal, are they?
The computer monitoring condition?
But not the ones you just got through saying.
No, they're not. But what I'm trying to point out, Your Honor, is that there are similarities between those conditions and the ones that are being challenged now.
I'm just saying that was a sloppy way to say, what is it, the soup or something that's in... They have apparently a book in Western Texas and San Antonio that really pertains to sex cases, and they just sort of refer to that and say, that's going to apply here.
Because we have so many sex offenders, there's a discrete policy. There is no separate policy for stalkers because we don't have critical mass.
Just transfer the words, that's all.
How much does monitoring actually take place?
Typically, what occurs in the Western District of Texas is it's if Your Honor is questioning the computer monitoring.
Yes, sir.
That would involve typically keywords that are being checked.
So what I mean, is there some room with a you know, the computer set up to receive signals from all these probationers, and keywords pop up and they say prisoner number, you know, person number blah blah blah, sex or murder, whatever.
My understanding is that there's a software program that is placed on the computer that the defendant is allowed to use, and then the probation office looks at the computer periodically to see if the program indicates that
so
any of the keywords have been used.
Sampling technique.
That's my understanding. And as I think a number of your honors have pointed out, the technology, the computer monitoring technology, could be quite different by the time supervised release begins for this particular defendant. And this particular defendant is at liberty to challenge the condition depending upon how it's implemented at the point of implementation.
You need to start making threats by phone.
It is important to the government, we believe, to the public, that this court keep intact these complementary and interlocking conditions that are meant to protect the public. That is what we're after, and that's what we're asking your honors to do, and not to micromanage these particular programs.
What's the range of the GPS ankle bracelet? In other words, if you go outside the Southern District of Texas or outside the state of Texas, does it lose effect?
I am told that it does not. However, I am told that as long as that ankle bracelet with GPS is being worn by the defendant, then the probation office can pinpoint the defendant's whereabouts anywhere. But if the defendant cuts off that bracelet, we don't know where he's going, we don't know who he's seeing, and we don't know why. And these other conditions help.
That it's been cut off?
Pardon me?
Is there a signal that it's been cut off?
Yes, there is. And this is an offender who has absconded from supervision. He was sentenced for escape, for goodness sakes. He has an abysmal record of failure on supervision, and we need maximum protection from this defendant.
Why did you relinquish home confinement?
There is I believe the case is Ferguson. It's a Fifth Circuit case that said that home confinement in conjunction with home detention in conjunction with GPS monitoring presented a legal problem for us. Home detention is supposed to be an alternative to imprisonment, and we've gotten our statutory maximum imprisonment, and the home detention, I don't believe we can use that as a proxy for imprisonment.
Okay. Well, I think we have your argument.
If the court has no further questions.
No, thank you. Ms. Coltharp.
Unless the court has questions, I'm happy to yield the rest of my time to your day.
I just wondered, what's the range of an ankle bracelet? Do you have any idea?
My understanding is, just as Mr. Hardy's, that it's like a cell phone GPS, so it has those limitations. You know, you might not get it in a spot, but that as long as he's wearing the bracelet, he will be, they will be able to detect him. I wanted to point out, when he is the most lucid and clear, he's actually fairly self-cognizant. And at some point during the record, Judge Prado said, you know, I'm worried what you're going to do about the probation officer. And Mr. Miller said, well, I can't be near him. I think Mr. Miller understands the conditions that were placed on him. I think he understands the geographical ones, the associational conditions. We have no objections to those. We don't have objections to the other conditions that give the probation officer some discretion because, as Judge Clement pointed out, they're standard conditions. I think they're reasonably necessary, and they're not potentially intruding upon his privacy interests the way the computer condition does. I really think that maybe not in this case, but in a future case, the potential Fourth Amendment interest of having your computer activity monitored will have to be addressed. Maybe not in this case.
Well, how are they supposed to go through the process of moving him to some other place? I mean, is he supposed to make that decision, or the local probation office, or what?
I was mulling that over yesterday when I was thinking about him coming back, and I think it will require some conjunction between us and the U.S. attorneys and the probation office to make sure that the probation office, I suspect, will reach out and see if there's some place that he can be supervised. He would like to be supervised in Austin. Really? He's got family there. That's not outside the Western District, but Judge Prado did allow for it as a fallback. So I think we'll try to speak on Mr. Miller's behalf. Probation will be reaching out and looking for someone else to supervise him.
Well, something says he threatened to cut his mother or something.
He did. His family, by the way, stands by him and understands that what he does is mental illness and does not believe he'll be violent, but he has threatened his mother. And as a young child, when anger can be particularly troublesome, he did hurt a sibling. He had very, very impulse control problems as a young child, as a child. I think you've seen it. I've seen it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.